everyone, and welcome to Social Sport. I'm your host, Emma Zimmerman, and this show is a member of the Sidious Mag podcast network. On Social Sport, I feature conversations with endurance athletes of all types committed to fostering social change. These athletes are climate change activists, they're mental health advocates, promoters of more inclusive outdoor spaces, and much more. But what ties all of these athletes together is that they're committed to exploring the connection between sport and activism in their lives. This series of Social Sport on REDS and eating disorders in sport is sponsored by Femme Protein Powder. Femme makes a plant-based powder, Femme Power Restore, that provides fuel and recovery with the active female in mind. I have personally had quite the journey in finding a protein powder that I enjoy. I find that a lot of them are heavy and hard to digest. But Femme Protein Powder is made with simple plant-based ingredients, it's easy to digest, and it's delicious. You can go to femmeproteinpowder.com and use the promo code SOCIALSPORT at checkout to get 10% off your order. That's femmeproteinpowder.com, promo code SOCIALSPORT. Today's guest is the incredible Stanford alum, Bowerman Track Club mid-distance runner, Elise Cranny. If you're a fan of running, you know Elise. She's a 12-time All-American. She was the runner-up at the NCAA Championships four times, and she is now the seventh fastest 5K runner in U.S. history. But recently, Elise has also been focused on another goal. She wants to increase conversation around REDS, otherwise known as relative energy deficiency in sport, and disordered eating. In this episode, we talk all about Elise's journey with REDS, what she wishes young runners knew, and how she hopes to continue her advocacy work in the future. I really appreciate Elise's work. Not only is she an incredible athlete, but she's also a great person too. Hey, Elise, welcome to Social Sport. Thanks so much for taking the time all the way at altitude.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. So if for anyone who isn't familiar, can you tell them who you are, where you are right now, and what you're passionate about?
Yeah, my name's Elise Cranny, and I'm originally from Boulder, Colorado, but now I'm running with the Bowerman Track Club based out of Portland, Oregon. And right now we're currently in Flagstaff, Arizona, doing some altitude training in hopes of maybe some races. Not sure if there will be an indoor season or what that looks like, but we're up here doing some high altitude training right now. And some of my passions. I'm passionate about running, cooking.
Big surprise.
Didn't see that one coming. I think connecting with people and getting to know people. Really passionate about, helping younger people in the sport. I just think I've been surrounded by great mentors, and I'm able to be at Bowerman because of coaches and people that I've looked up to, and family and friends and people that have helped me. So I think that's something I'm really passionate about too, is helping the next generation of runners come up as well.
And I know you've been doing so much important work around that, especially recently, which we'll go into, but I'm wondering, because you're at altitude right now, where are you in your training? Are you targeting any race for the indoor season or anything coming up on your mind?
Yeah, it's kind of hard, I guess, because things are still very up in the air as to, what races will maybe available. But I think we'll be up here for quite a while, a little over a month and a half, and then kind of see what races happen then. I've heard about a couple different things. I don't know if that will be indoor or maybe outdoor in some warmer places. So kind of just the goal right now, I guess, is just to, keep building on that fitness and working on, the mental skills and just building that strength in hopes that there'll be some competition soon.
Yeah. And I should say before we get into it, that even though, there's so much uncertainty in 2020, it was quite the year, of course, it was not void of accomplishments for you. I mean, in July, you PR'd in the 5K, you became the seventh fastest American woman in the 5K. Is that right? Do I have that right? Yeah. And you just got the Olympic standard in December 2. So congratulations on all of that. Not a bad 2020 for you.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm really glad that there were some opportunities, like really, really grateful. And I think in some ways it was really good during that, you know, quarantine period. Like, we're really lucky that running something that like we can do outdoors and you can just still get that, you know, that effort in, even if we couldn't be meeting all together as a team. But I think in a lot of ways it, you know, kind of reignited, I don't know, that passion and working on the little things in a way, just kind of really getting back to the basics. So I think in some ways, like there were definitely a lot of good lessons learned through that.
What was it like to just race your teammates at the inter-squad meets? Are you getting sick of racing them?
It was kind of crazy because both Shelby and I ran the 5K in December and we were like, whoa, like we haven't raced against like people other than our teammates in so long. So we were kind of just reflecting on that. But it was definitely different. But also I think it's just something that's so special about our team is like that, yes, you're racing against teammates, but it's like you're being, you know, pushed by them and you're still getting like the most brought out of yourself. And I think it really is a special added bonus to be like, okay, I've been training with these people like at altitude for weeks. And so I think that gives you a little like extra confidence too. Like, I know it was really helpful when running the 5K this summer, like being behind Courtney and being like, okay, I've been training with her. Like, you can do this, Elise. Like, this is just like practice, like stay relaxed. So I think in that regard, it's really helpful to have that and have your teammates to push you that are already pushing you on a daily basis.
And it seems like that team aspect is just so important for you, not only with your own team, but I'm hearing you talk about this mentorship piece of everything you do and how passionate you are about bringing up young girls in the sport and helping them. And that's really why we're here to talk today, because you've been so open about your own story with relative energy deficiency in sports and in opening up that conversation for maybe younger athletes. So I'd love to hear your story behind that, really, when REDS started for you. I know that it starts differently for different people, and you've talked a little bit about how there was a disordered eating element to it. So if you go a little bit more into that.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, I think looking back, it's just crazy. I think the lack of knowledge that I had around that, I definitely think I got sucked into the mindset that I think is really, really common, unfortunately, of like, the more you train and the harder you're training, like it's normal to like lose a period. That just means that you're, you know, doing it right and training hard. And I think that's just something that we still need to work on changing in the sport is like, no, it's like, you know, that's not good for your body. You're not going to recover the same. Like, you're not going to, you know, be getting the, gaining the bone density that you need and things like that. And that's going to have long-term impacts. And so I think looking back, I think it kind of started a little bit toward the end of high school. And I just don't think I was aware. I was like, oh yeah, it's normal. I lose my period when I'm in season. And then I get it when I'm on my off time. And so I wish, yeah, that I would have known then that like, okay, no, that's not normal. You can still be like training hard and you'll actually be training better and feel stronger and healthier and recover faster if you are getting a period and fueling properly. And I think luckily for me, I kind of got away with that for a while in high school and it didn't really catch up to me until my sophomore year of college. And that's kind of when I started to get a lot of those stress reactions and stress fractures, which usually come from like, yeah, this lack of not getting a period and just losing so much bone density. And I think that was a big turning point for me was like, okay, like this is a problem and this is affecting, you know, your bone health and therefore is going to affect the longevity of your career. But even more than that, just like your overall, you know, health and happiness. And I think, you know, ability to focus in school and ability to form relationships when you're spending so much energy, you know, kind of thinking about what to eat or restricting food and just not really being able to think clearly. And I think, for me, I think I made a lot of changes my sophomore year. that helped me to like slowly work on getting a period back and, you know, making those really important fueling changes. And I think the one thing that that is a really important message that I want to share is like, even when you make those changes, like for me, I made a lot of those big changes, but once you're kind of like in that energy deficit for a while, it takes a bit to like climb out of that hole, so to speak. So I think I still continue to get quite a few bone injuries after that. And I think it can be really frustrating if you're going through that. You're like, hey, I've made all these fueling changes. Like maybe I'm getting a regular period. Or like, why am I still experiencing these bone injuries? And I think just really staying the course and staying committed to knowing that like, if you're fueling properly, getting a regular period, you know, eating those, you know, those healthy fats and carbs in a much more balanced diet, that like you will have longevity and you will get back to the point where you're no longer in that energy cycle. But just the importance of really like, I mean, even now it's just constantly reminding myself like, okay, this is like, these are the choices that you need to make to like stay healthy and have a long career and really being motivated by that.
So many things that you said are so helpful and I'm sure so relatable to many female athletes. One thing you talked about is how losing your period in high school when all of this started kind of was thought of as normal. And I've noticed that that's often the case. I think that, and beyond high school, many people believe that that is a normal experience for female athletes. Why do you think that is? Why do we look the other way?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been thinking about this recently because, yeah, it's just like after I posted some of these things, just the amount of messages all saying like people not realizing it was normal is just crazy. And I just keep hearing that, you know, like I'm training hard and so it's normal. And I think, I don't really know where it comes from. I think in some ways it could just be, I think it's just a tendency of kind of sports culture in general, like, you know, the idea of like more is always better, like the, I don't know, the things that you hear from a really young age, you know, like no pain, no gain. Like, I think things like that, I'm not really sure. I think it's like, then you think like, yeah, I'm really fit and I'm training really hard and I'm like getting my body fat low because I'm fit. And so that's like a good thing that I'm losing my period. And it's like, I really hope that we can, you know, change that message. And I think it's starting to change, but even seeing people talk more about just like the importance of recovery and the like stress plus rest equals growth and things like that. I think for so long, the conversation was like more, train harder, you know, like get leaner. And I think that we still just need to like continue to work on changing that message, like particularly in the running community, you know, focusing on like, okay, gaining strength instead of losing weight, or you know, really getting that like consistency, like consistent long healthy career and things like that. And I think it's hard to make that change, but I hope that, you know, in the future and with more conversations, that can kind of continue to be more of the focus and more of the talk around it.
Yeah, totally. And it's just so widespread. I mean, I even remember, I think I'm about your age, I might be a year older, but I remember being a high school runner and talking about this among teammates. And it was like, it was expected that you wouldn't have your period during the season. So it's just so important that you're talking about how that's not normal.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing that can be like disheartening too, that I hope can change even within like high school and college programs, like talking to your teammates more about it and realizing it. Cause I think I hear that a lot too. And that was definitely an experience, is like, oh, we just don't talk about it, or we all think it's normal. But, you know, I think really like leaning on your teammates in that community and being like, okay, let's all hold each other accountable and know that this isn't, how can we, you know, kind of all work together and help one another too.
Totally. Such great advice. And going back to your own experience, I mean, it seems like this all came to a head when you were at Stanford in your second year. And you mentioned some of the steps you took to eat better and to get to this healthier place. Was it just the nutrition that you focused on, or were there other steps you took to get to a healthier place?
Yeah, I think it was primarily nutrition, but I think also a lot of people have asked me, like, did you have to like take a significant time off training? And I think for me, that's where it was helpful that the injury came, because it was a huge wake up call and it forced me to take time off, which I think is what my body needed. And again, like, you know, everyone's different. So it kind of depends, like some people may be able to get it back, but without, you know, cutting out training. But I think that was really important for me to kind of jumpstart that process, is like, okay, I'm taking, you know, a significant, I think I took 2 months or longer off running to recover from my stress fracture. And it was like also being cognizant of like, okay, like let's not go too hard in cross training. Like I took 2 or 3 weeks, I think, completely off of nothing. And I think that's just really important. Like just again, realizing like your body is in some sort of deficit. So really giving it a chance to, you know, kind of take in that nutrition. And I think a lot of times too, and can people, I hear from people, it's like, okay, you know, get injured, so I'm not doing as much activity, so I need to like adjust my food intake. And I think just trying to, it was really helpful and freeing for me to try not to be so calculated about that and be like, I'm in a deficit, so I need to look at it that way. I can't look at it as like what I'm, how much I'm exercising on a day to day. It needs to be like, I'm in a deficit and I'm trying to get out of that. And I need to really like get back to listening to my hunger cues and my body and what it wants, and just being more, of a balanced eater in general. Again, like I think it was really helpful for me to hear the term like intuitive eating, you know, and it's like listening to like, there are no good or bad foods, but like, what is your body craving? Like, what does it want? Like, does it really want carbs? That probably means that you're not getting enough, you know, and you need to like fill your glycogen stores in your muscles or whatever it may be. And I think trying to do that, and I'm talking about this like it was some, you know, like very easy thing to get over in a couple of weeks. Like I acknowledge that it takes a lot to like get to that point and challenge those, you know, those negative thoughts or those thought patterns or habits that have been ingrained for a while. But I kind of think those two things hand in hand, and just again thinking about the purpose behind the purpose and motivation behind the cross training and the fueling, you know, like, am I doing this to help me become a happier, healthier version of myself? Or am I making decisions out of fear and stress? And I think identifying that, and another thing, sorry, I'm kind of rambling now.
But no, this is all great. Keep rambling.
Another thing that was really helpful for me that I forget who told me, but something that I've held on to a lot now is, the decisions, whether it be with like exercise, cross training, or like nutrition, like that make you, that are like out of your comfort zone or something you don't want to do, like recognizing those cues and being like, that's probably what I need to do because it's something that's like going to help me make the positive change that I need. So whether that be like, if you're in college and there are certain foods that you avoid in the dining hall, like, okay, then try to like take it little steps at a time and be like, okay, I'm going to have this today that I wouldn't normally, or like, and slowly over time, I think kind of looking at that as then it doesn't seem so overwhelming, at least for me. I think sometimes if someone's just like, you need to eat more and you need to exercise less, and that's how you're going to get your period back. But I think for me, it was really helpful to break it down a bit more and like, okay, how can I change my fueling? How can I like eat, like right when I wake up in the morning, eat a bigger breakfast? How can I make sure I'm fueling right after a workout? You know, how can I add some more snacks in, or a nighttime snack? How can I add some more like fats into my meals so they're more satiating? So I think when you can look at it as making like a bunch of smaller changes, at least for me, that was really helpful and seemed less overwhelming than like, I just need to suddenly cut all activity and I need to just eat a ton. I think that can be really overwhelming. And again, it's different for everyone, but that's something that was really helpful for me, is like making those small changes and like slowly trying to get out of your comfort zone and maybe, you know, introduce foods that you had like cut out or avoided or again, labeled as bad or unhealthy. I think that can be really, really freeing and can help you move forward.
That's really great advice. And I think it's also just standard practice for anyone getting over disordered eating or an eating disorder. And I should just say, if someone listening is really struggling with disordered eating, you should definitely reach out for professional help, and I'll drop some links in the show notes. But it's not overwhelming. You know, a lot of those, I guess it can be overwhelming, but there are like these smaller steps are kind of standard practice, and reintroducing foods that someone might be uncomfortable with. So it shouldn't seem overwhelming, I guess, is what I'm saying. Yeah. So thank you for highlighting that.
Yeah, no, I think, like you said, it's really important. I think if you're struggling with this, to seek professional help, and even help with like family or friends or coaches or people close to you. I think that was something that was really helpful too, is seeking professional help to maybe help you set up a plan, and then kind of sharing that with people close to you that you trust that can hopefully help hold you accountable for those times when you feel like you're falling back into those old patterns. I think that can really be helpful just as at the beginning, as you kind of get, as it is uncomfortable and you're trying to get those new like healthier habits more solidified.
I love that. Yes, a support system for sure.
Yeah.
So one word that you mentioned a few times is deficit. You mentioned that your body was in a deficit, and even after you were eating in a much more balanced way, you were eating enough, you were healthier, you were still getting stress fractures. And I think that's a very common situation because you've really dug your body into this hole. What might you say to someone who is maybe going through that experience right now and is trapped in the cycle of, okay, I've gotten healthier both mentally and physically, but my body is still in this deficit. I'm still getting stress fractures. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say two things. I would say be patient and stay the course. I think it's really easy when you keep getting injured to question what you're doing, especially when I think it's, again, it's against like habits or things that have been deeply ingrained. I think it can be like, oh, I'm never going to get back to this point, or like, I'm going to gain X amount of weight and I'm not going to be the same. I think trying to focus on like, I'm going to come back like a stronger version, you know, like really focus on that. And I think it can be hard. You can have to tell yourself that a lot of times over and over, but be like, okay, wow, I was like running or doing this like in a deficit, and imagine what I'm going to do now when I come back and I'm like well fueled and I'm healthy. And I think just kind of looking forward and being excited about that, but again, being patient to say, okay, it's going to take time for my body to get out of this. But again, really like committing to it, like knowing that you're doing it the like quote unquote right way, you know, you're going to like, you're laying the foundation with more like sustainable, healthy habits. And I think, again, it can be really easy to want to go back to old things or be like, oh, this isn't working because I'm still getting injured. But I would say like it is, there's just like a lag time, and it's like going to be different for everyone, but really staying the course and knowing like if you fully commit to it, like it's frustrating, but you will eventually get out of that place, and like it will be so worth it, and your body will thank you, and like health, happiness, long-term health, all of that.
For sure. And I mean, what an example in you stayed the course, and look where you are now, running with Bowerman, one of the most, if not the most competitive pro team in the US. So just what an amazing example for anyone at any level who might be struggling.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate that. I think that's something that I even think about now, which again, I would say like really stay the course and go all in, because I don't think that, I think if I hadn't have gone all in and made a lot of really, really big changes that I would be here. And I think I even thought when I kept getting bone injuries in college, I'm like, maybe, you know, I'm just not cut out to do this. Like maybe my body just can't handle the training. And it's like, if it can't handle the training in college, like when I take another step up to the pros, like it's not going to be able to handle the mileage. But it's like, you know, since being in this group, it's taken time to like increase my mileage, but I'm running like mileage that I honestly wouldn't have even ever been able to fathom. And it's like making those like changes allowed me to be here. And it was like a long road, but knowing that, like, again, if you're in that state too, that you can make those changes and gain a lot of strength. And so you're not like necessarily injury prone all the time, and that means you're never going to be able to train at a certain level. So I think in that regard too, like making sure you're not limiting yourself or putting yourself, you know, in a box of being like I, again, I don't think that looking back, if I would have been in college looking forward, that I would have seen where I am now, but I'm glad that I really committed to those changes. So to know that now, slowly over time and like years of rebuilding back up and really fueling properly and again prioritizing recovery in those down times, that it's like your body can handle much more than you think, as long as you're, you know, again prioritizing the nutrition and recovery and not getting yourself back into any sort of hole or overtraining or deficit.
For sure. And you have been, of course, at all levels of the sport. You've been at really the highest tier of all levels of the sport. And I think this is a problem at all levels. It's a problem in high school running programs, maybe even middle school, in NCAA, D3, D2, D1, pro. In your experience, is there an area of the sport where REDS is most common and most needs to be addressed?
That's a really good question. I mean, part of me just says like the younger, the better, like in middle school or high school. Again, I just think the more awareness we can bring to it and the more we can talk about it starting at a younger age, that I hope then that as you people get into college, it's at least more acknowledged. And again, as we talked about earlier, can be more talked about on the team. Again, think it needs to be addressed at every level, but it's like the more awareness I think that there can be coming from, you know, even coaches, parents, just kind of all a lot of different sources, I think that could just set people up better and then prevent such a big deficit. You know, it's like if we can prevent people from missing periods earlier, then hopefully you're not going 3, 4, 5, 6 plus years and now you're trying to get out of a much bigger hole than you would have been with if you like maybe struggled to address it at first, but address it after 1 or 2 years.
For sure. And I love that you said younger age is better, because I've been thinking a lot about how there really isn't enough conversation around how puberty affects girls running trajectories differently than it affects boys. And I personally think that gives a lot of shame and anger that girls often feel, I should say girl runners, girl athletes feel towards their bodies. What do you wish you could say to a young girl runner about the relationship between her body changing and running?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And this is another thing that I think about a lot. I think if we can just continue the conversation more about your body will change. Like, it's not a matter of like if it will, it's like when it will, and it happens for, you know, girls at many different times. And I think just being like patient and kind to yourself during that period, and like, this is normal and this should be happening, and recognizing, like, I guess more generally, like about the period too. I've read Stacey Sims has some really good work on just like harnessing the power of the period. And I think that that's something that hopefully we can change, even just the conversation around even just like girls hitting puberty in general, is like, okay, you're going to get this newfound strength. Like, let's use this as a tool. It's like, we know if we're fueling properly, like it's allowing us to, you know, have the hormones that we need to like build strong bone and have the muscle and gain the strength that we need to. So I think kind of switching it, instead of like, again, that fear or panic that the body's going to change, like knowing that it's going to, and like, again, sometimes you have to ride it out. Sometimes you may experience injuries, or there may be a bit of a learning curve and like, you know, your changing body and how that's affecting your running. But I think, again, even with that, like staying the course and trusting, like, okay, I don't want I think this is something that I struggled with too, is like, you know, comparing your college body, your high school body. It's like a 22-year-old body shouldn't look like a 16-year-old body, you know? And even I think comparing to the pro running world too, like a 30 or 28-year-old pro runner who's been running for 10 plus years, like, shouldn't look like a body in college. And I think that was something that I struggled with too, is comparing that. It's like someone who's been running, you know, however many high mileage weeks for, you know, 6, 7 more years than me should have a different body. And I think that everyone has such a different body, and everyone, yeah, I guess just focusing on the power of your own body and your own kind of trajectory through puberty, but also just like really not trying to fight that, but embrace it and kind of seeing the newfound strength that comes with a body that's changing and getting your period, which again is easier said than done. But I think that the more we can try to kind of change that conversation about it to be less like fearful and more like empowering, the better.
So, so important. And I think especially because high school girls now have such access to the pros through Instagram, through social media, which is really different from when like you and I were in high school.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just can't imagine the effect that that has on, you know, a 16-year-old girl comparing her body to, you know, mid-20s, late-20s, even 30s pro athlete. Yeah, that yeah. probably has a big effect.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think social media is great to be able to connect and have the, you know, community, but I do think it's a huge problem with the body image piece, particularly in this sport and just the comparison piece. And again, I think, I mean, I even say this now, but it's like rationally you can say that to yourself, but sometimes once you see it, it's just like gets implanted in the back of your head and it's there and, you know, a motivator, maybe not in a healthy or a good way, but I think that's where, not to like overstate it, but I think that's where the period is so incredible, because everyone's body looks so different and what they're able, you know, the mileage they're training at, how long they've been running. But that's such a good metric of like, okay, I know that I'm training well, but I also know that I'm fueling properly and my energy is in balance because I'm getting a period. So it's like, if that's what I'm getting and someone who's 28 is getting a regular period, but looks really different, but that's like healthy for them and that's where they're at and they're fueling properly. So again, like you said, you know, trying not to compare, like, okay, that person's 12 plus years older and has been running way longer, but if I'm, you know, getting a period, I'm healthy, like really focusing on those other metrics, you know, like, am I recovering? Do I feel strong in workouts? I think that's what I come back to a lot, is like, how do you feel? Like, do you feel strong and powerful? Then like, can we try to focus and talk more about that than on like appearance or what we look like?
Totally. Yeah. So I know you're now a league member for Voice in Sport, and you're doing a lot of work to mentor young girls, or I should say high school girls, around these topics. Could you tell me a little bit about that? First of all, what is Voice in Sport? And then how did you get involved and what are you doing with them?
Yeah. Yeah. Voice in Sport has been great. And I'm just really grateful for them, because I think my involvement with them has really like inspired me to, you know, commit to really talking about this topic and trying to help younger girls with it, because I think it's so important. Again, as I said earlier, it's like, I wish that was something that I knew sooner. So if I can help like a few high school girls like realize the importance of fueling properly at an earlier time and hopefully avoid some sort of injuries in the future and just be happier, like healthier versions of themselves, then that's what I want to try to do. But Voice in Sport is an incredible platform for female athletes. There's an advocacy piece and then the mentorship piece. And then there's a content piece. So they put out a lot of great content. They have experts that, you know, like nutritionists, doctors, psychologists that work to help them pump out really great content about all sorts of different things, you know, reds, nutrition, you know, they had a bunch of articles of like staying motivated during the pandemic or things like that. So there's a lot of like really great resources on the website. And then the piece that I'm most directly involved in is the mentorship piece. So there's group mentorship and one-on-one mentorship. And it's just collegiate and pro runners, or runners and women from all sorts of different sports that really just want to, you know, mentor high school and younger athletes and hopefully help them with basically anything, you know, like whether it be the recruiting process, whether it be, you know, mindset, body image, really, really anything. So it's been really special to form relationships with some girls on there and, you know, even talking to people who are in the middle of dealing with injuries right now or things like that. And I think ever since I kind of had a bunch of bone injuries in college, I feel like you learn a lot along the way. And it's like, you want to be able to share that knowledge, and you can't help someone completely avoid injury, but hopefully you can shorten the timeline or shorten the learning curve, so to speak. And I think that's something that I'm really passionate about and brings me a lot of joy, is hopefully just helping people to make changes sooner so that they can, again, be, you know, healthy and happy person and runner.
For sure. Yeah. And I feel like we've talked so much about, you know, what runners can do, what young athletes can do, but I'm also thinking about coaches, and I'm curious whether in your experience at any level of the sport, whether coaches were talking about this, whether they're talking about the differences in girls versus boys running trajectories, whether they're talking about reds, what that looks like.
Yeah, I think it needs to be talked about way more. Like when you talk about, you know, when do you think is most important at what age? I think at any age, it coming from the coach is really important. And I think sometimes talking to a few coaches, I think people have expressed like they don't know what to say, especially like male coaches. But I think at some point, if you bring in a female coach, or even if you just say something like, I'm not really sure how to go about this, but I think it's something that we need to talk about. I think just like opening the floor to that, as simple as doing that, can really go a long way. Cause again, maybe that just helps facilitate conversations between teammates, or, you know, makes athletes feel like they could go to the coach. I think that's something that's really important. And yeah, I just think it's something that definitely needs to be talked about more within teams.
100%. Yeah. And I guess I'm just curious, because you were in such high level programs, and I guess in high school, you yourself were very competitive for the state of Colorado, but then you ran for Stanford. Was there any sort of standardized practiced or any programming in any of those levels, either high school or college, to talk about these issues?
Yeah, I think I'm very lucky that, you know, both of the coaches that I had around me, like I was able to have some sort of dialogue with them about that. I think definitely looking back, though, it definitely is kind of shocking looking back that it wasn't more of a conversation team-wide. I think I ended up having a lot of kind of side or one-on-one conversations with a lot of teammates who were younger, who I saw kind of going through a similar thing and wanting to help them. And I think, again, though, like really just talking about that more as an entire group could have gone a long way. But I'm definitely, you know, grateful for those opportunities too. Like when you can, you know, see, you don't want to see a teammate get injured, but when you kind of see them going on a similar trajectory again, and hopefully not being able to totally change the trajectory, but hopefully shortening that timeline a bit, or helping them learn some of those lessons again, like sooner than I feel like it took me to maybe learn them.
Do you have any thoughts for like coaches or maybe athletic program staff on what changes you wish you could see in these programs?
Yeah, I think, again, I think just any sort of open dialogue. I think even, again, talking to some like high school or collegiate runners, I think even if a coach finds this topic to be really important and wants to talk about it, and they're not, they're focused on like the health and overall well-being of an athlete and not just performance, I think when it's not communicated, it is easy for it to be interpreted by the athlete as like they only care about performance. And that may not be the intention, but I think that sometimes that's how it is interpreted, just because like that's kind of the nature of the sport. And I think that's really easy to jump to in conclusion. So I think, again, it doesn't have to be like a super extended thing, but I think just saying something and opening the dialogue, and, you know, hopefully at some schools there are resources, whether that be to see a nutritionist or a specialist, but kind of just opening that up a little bit more and being like, hey, I can work with you to put you in contact with someone, or let's talk about this. Or I think that was something that was really helpful for me at Stanford. Like when I did get those bone injuries, like really trying to find the root problem. Like I think that's really important too, from a coaching standpoint, is like working with the athlete to be like, okay, this happened. Can we look just beyond training and maybe make sure, like whether that be getting blood work or checking in about and being honest with nutrition and fueling and recovery, like really looking at like, okay, you know, what can we do differently to avoid this in the future? I'm grateful that I had that experience, because I think that allowed that first injury to be such a wake-up call. I think if it was just like, oh, like maybe you were just training too hard and like we'll just like scale back training a little bit. I think that would have done me a huge disservice. So I think in that regard, if a coach can really look at it more holistically and try to say, okay, what changes can we make to avoid injury outside of just training? I think, again, just opening that dialogue too can really be helpful.
I love just the simplicity of your answer, how you keep coming back to this opening dialogue, because I think often, like myself included, and many people are like, what big systemic changes can we make in the NCAA and reform the whole system? But I mean, it's so true that opening up dialogue is perhaps the most important thing to do, because if you look at, you know, these conversations outside of the collegiate system are happening on podcasts, they're happening on your social media feed and articles, and that makes a huge difference. So I appreciate that simplicity. Yeah.
No, of course. I appreciate you, you know, even doing podcasts like this, because I think sometimes if coaches don't know how to talk about it, it's like, okay, you can assign a podcast to your team, and that at least like, oh, if you don't know what to say, I think, not to sound like a broken record, but saying anything or sending out any sort of information about this topic is huge. Like, don't wait to like know exactly how to handle it or exactly what to say, because I think then you're just going a longer period of time without making change. So again, if you don't know what to say and you just need to send out some sort of podcast to your team or some sort of article on Reds or something on the importance of fueling or whatever it may be, again, just to like make your athletes aware that this is something that you're, you know, thinking about and something that you're there open to like listen and try to help to the best of your ability, I think that would really go a long way. And it's like, if we did that with every program, I think that a lot of change could come from that.
I think that's a really important piece of advice you just gave, because I think there is a big fear factor. Sometimes some coaches are just less comfortable, which, you know, they shouldn't be uncomfortable talking about these things, but some coaches are just not as good with words. Maybe they don't understand the science as much. I don't know, but yeah, there are professionals for that. So that's, you know, really important. You can give out an article, you can give out a podcast. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Do you have any other future plans for advocacy in this space, or someplace you want to take this work that you're doing now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I've kind of been thinking about that a lot recently. And even kind of going back to like when I first did the first podcast with Voice in Sport, and the first post is like, I followed it up with posts because I want there to, again, I'm not an expert, but based on my experience, I want to try to give people like tangible things to hopefully help make some sort of change. So I've been trying to think about that a lot recently. Again, as I work more with Voice in Sport, I think that's kind of where a lot of my energy and focus is right now. And that's like a very, you know, one-on-one or minute scale, but kind of just continuing to work with my mentees on that and keep brainstorming on ways to just keep expanding it. And as we've talked about, you know, how can we, I don't know, even is there something we can, some sort of like curriculum almost that we can set up that's easy to allow coaches to start that conversation, you know, in a streamlined way. Again, I know I've said this a lot, but I think the more that we can talk about it, like within teams and between athletes and coaches, that can be, create a lot of progress in the area.
Well, I'm here for everything, all the advocacy work that you do in the future, because it's so exciting. I can't wait to see what you do, and you've already made a big difference. And I think I said this to you before we started recording, but there are people at different levels of the sport talking about this, which I think is so important. But I think it's very important for the pros to be talking about it, because, you know, people look up to you. Like I said, there are high schoolers who are following all of the Bowerman babes on Instagram, and just you sharing your experience with Reds is, I'm sure, so important to so many people.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, definitely. I think that's, I guess that's my my one thing that I want to work on for this year especially, is I'm not great at the social media Instagram piece, but trying to see it more as a platform to like help and inspire people in that way. I think that's something that I really want to continue to do.
And no pressure. That was not meant to pressure you. You said, any conversation is better than nothing. So we appreciate you as you are.
Not at all. No, it's more just like inspiring, and I've been thinking about it a lot, and it's so I'm like, really, that was really nice of you to say too. And I think even getting, again, just hearing people that I've worked with through Voice and Sport or a couple messages is like, when you kind of see like, oh, people are like, wow, I had no idea that you're going through what sounds like basically the same thing that I'm going through right now. I think that's, again, brings me like, really, I'm like, okay, I really want to like help you through this, and makes, you know, you feel connected to people, like even people that you don't know, but it's like, okay, they're sharing a similar experience that I once had. And I think there's something like, you know, really cool about that, to be able to like learn from one another. And back to the Voice and Sport thing too, I think that's what's been really cool for me to see with the group mentorship sessions, is even, you know, you have high schoolers from all over the world, and they're even like helping each other, like, oh, this worked for me and this worked for me. And I think that's been really cool to see, is just like how, you know, we can all help each other through like information sharing or the different, you know, backgrounds or experiences we've had. And I think that's a really cool thing that I hope continues.
Yes, very cool. So we get pretty deep on social sport, but I like to kind of cool it down with some fun rapid fire questions. Are you ready for some rapid fire?
Oh man, I hope so.
It doesn't have to be too rapid. Again, no pressure here. So between Boulder, Palo Alto, or Portland, which one would you choose?
Oh, I gotta go Boulder.
Okay, cool. Good answer. If you had to be stranded for a week on a tiny island with one of your Bowerman teammates, who would you choose?
Oh man, that's a hard question. I probably got to go Vanessa Frazier, because we were teammates at Stanford, and now it's really special to be teammates here. So I feel like we've been together for a long time. So I got to go Vanessa.
So who do you most look up to?
Oh man. I mean, I have to say, like, my teammates, honestly. I think that's just, since joining this team, I think it's just been really special to learn from every single one of them, and really see the day-to-day work that they put in, and, you know, make little changes, or be like, oh, this is like what Shelby and Chris are doing to get to this high level. Like, this is, you know, I think it's really helpful in reflecting, like, okay, these are things that I could do better too. So yeah, I think I'm just constantly inspired by all my teammates.
That's such a sweet answer. And I won't make you choose between them for that one. Do you have a favorite post long run meal?
Ooh, any sort of, I love brunch foods in general. Like, if I could eat breakfast or brunch. So, post long run brunch is always great. Honestly, any sort of like big, like egg omelet or scramble, pancakes, any sort of waffle, really anything, any like big brunch.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Breakfast foods are always the best after running. Yeah. So why is sport a powerful platform for social change?
Oh man. Wow, that's such a good question. I think wow, you're stumping me here. I think that sport allows people to get to know themselves better and realize their own confidence and strength. And I think that goes a long way in what you can apply to the world outside of running. And I think just giving people, yeah, the confidence to continue to fight for social change outside of the running world. Like, I think, yeah, I think just the confidence and strength piece and what you gain from pushing yourself and surpassing your own limits, I think is really applicable to life outside of running, of like, okay, we can challenge the status quo and we can make big social change, because we're doing that on a micro level, you know, each time we surpass our own limits in a workout or race. And I think taking all of those skills to create big social change is, yeah, it's pretty applicable.
Totally. That's a great answer. Thank you so much, Elise. This has been great, super informative, very fun. And I'm so excited to see what you do in 2021 on the track and also in your advocacy, which will continue. So thank you for everything.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me on. It's been really fun.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Social Sport. If you enjoyed this conversation, make sure to follow Social Sport on Instagram at Social Sport Pod. I would also appreciate it if you went over to Apple Podcasts, subscribed, and left a rating and a review for Social Sport. You can find more info on the show at SidiousMag.com in the Podcasts tab under Social Sport. This episode was sponsored by Femme Protein Powder. You can go to FemmeProteinPowder.com and type in the promo code SocialSport to get 10% off your order. Thanks for joining me. Stay sporty and keep resisting.